Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
All right, folks, how about that? The Media Project is underway. It's a half hour of commentary and analysis, and some days, on our best days, some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Dr. Alan Shartok, who runs Northeast Public Radio. Sir.
Well, I'm having a great time. I'm very close to the microphone.
That's
because Rosemary gets upset when I'm not.
Rosemary wants to be sure she can hear you so that she can better...
I want to catch every word.
Yeah, we all do. We all do.
Well, the listeners want him to stand further back from the microphone.
Thank you, Ira. Typical. As my Aunt Ruth would say, typical.
All right. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and former professor at the University of Albany. How are you?
Good.
Good. And Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and its affiliated publications.
Good day. Nice to see you all.
Nice to see you all. Absolutely. We have a lot to deal with here because it is, as usual, a remarkable week in the world of the media. Of course, the president has, well, he's turned the war on the press into a central part of his presidency. He has gone over and over some things more than usual. And he's even skewing Fox these days for having the nerve to interview a Democrat on the air. And he is these days taking on Fox, saying, quote, it isn't working for us anymore. So what happens if the president can't even turn to Fox to reliably echo his points?
He creates his own television network. Trump Network seems back in the picture. This is not my original thought, but I do think it's correct that he is again getting ready to lose, as he did the first time. He did not think he would win in 2016, and he talked about putting on his own conservative-leaning network, and I believe that talk is starting again.
That's a good point. You know, Fox isn't working for us anymore.
Right.
Us being, of course, him. That's a very good point.
Well, but his own network, would it be formed before his presidency ends, before the election?
What would stop him? It doesn't stop anything else he's doing.
No, I just wonder whether logistically it could come together that quickly. I mean, it's laughable. We know that the primetime hosts who draw the highest ratings for Fox are still very much in Trump's corner. We know that Fox has just hired Sarah Sanders, the former press secretary, to be a commentator. So do you want to tell me that there's more... slightly more balanced coverage on Fox now than there used to be, it seems to be. But to suggest that Fox doesn't work for, quote, us anymore doesn't quite ring a bell for me.
I think it's notable that when the president attacks stories that are meticulously sourced and backed up, the news organizations stand behind them. Fox does not do that. When, for example, the president went after Axios because there was a story that said that the president had suggested multiple times using nuclear weapons to attack hurricanes. To kill hurricanes. The Washington Post reported that he had told aides that he would issue pardons to officials who violated the law in order to build the border wall. In both cases, he attacked those. And the Washington Post said, we fully stand by our story. Axios came back with letter, chapter, and verse of how they had sourced the story. Whereas when he attacks Fox, the network stands silent, which seems to me to be an indication of the executives trying to curry favor with the president rather than supporting the journalism of those journalists who are still in their employ.
Although one could make the argument, not that I'm going to, but I could make the argument, that, you know, the Wall Street Journal, owned by the same guy, has been fairly hands-off and has not been the sort of mouthpiece that the president has expected from Fox.
The news reporting in the Wall Street Journal has been terrific. The editorial page is preposterous.
Sycophantic. it's just crazy.
Has always been.
Has always been, yeah. I mean, they're sometimes just silly, the contortions they go through to try to support the president. But this brings us actually, in terms of defending coverage that is problematic, this brings us to MSNBC and to the nighttime host Lawrence O'Donnell, who came through with a claim at the top of his show that the president had taken out loans that were co-signed by Russian oligarchs. He quickly had to rescind that, right?
Yeah, he did.
He may be suspended or fired by the time this program airs, and if he hasn't been, he should be.
You know, Rosemary was on top of this one right from the very beginning.
The minute he said, I have a one-source story.
Yeah.
The editor in you goes, okay, you're not ready to publish yet.
So why did you say it?
Well,
yeah, if you say, well, I have one source, but we don't know if it's true. So
yeah, and he kept saying, if it's true, as if that makes it okay to print or to broadcast, excuse me, rumor. That's what it is. If you only have one source, it's a rumor. So yeah, you're right, Alan. As soon as he said that, and if you remember, he first said this during the handoff of his show with Rachel Maddow, and her eyes bugged out too.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, we know that the right wing, you throw red meat to the followers and they can never get enough. Well, you know, I hate to say it, but MSNBC has that same problem in this case with O'Donnell. He wanted to get out in front of it, and he didn't think it through.
Yes, he didn't think it through. The difficulty is that this now taints so much. I mean, I am hearing from our readers who are sending this story to me saying, see, you people in the media are just a bunch of people out to get Trump. Now, I am tempted to respond, and which of the 10,000 lies documented by the Washington Post that the president has told has he retracted? At least in this case, Lawrence O'Donnell retracted, apologized, has bent over backwards, and we don't hear that, though we know that the president misspeaks, let's say, lies repeatedly.
Well, here's what we do know. We saw an interview last night as we speak with Chris Cuomo interviewing Kayleigh McEnany, who's a Trump surrogate, who, when asked directly, has Trump ever lied, she said no. But she says the media lies all the time. And when you have a story such as the O'Donnell story, it fits into that narrative. It just couldn't have come at a worse time with, you know, we're trying, our industry is trying, by and large, to handle this story accurately, or handle all stories accurately. And when you have a story like O'Donnell's, that blows the model up.
Okay, now it's very important that Rosemary or you, Ira, or Rex tells everybody who's listening to the show what exactly this assertion was.
I'm sorry, I thought I did right at the top. Maybe you missed it. I will repeat it. He said a single anonymous source close to Deutsche Bank told him that the tax returns that they had obtained from Trump show that the president pays very little income tax, and that there are loan documents showing that his co-signers are Russian oligarchs.
Right.
Then he said, that would explain, it seems to me, every kind word Donald Trump has ever said about Russia and Vladimir Putin, if true. And I stress the if true part of this. Okay, that's what he said.
I'm an NBC follower. I watch it all the time, although I always have had trouble with Lawrence O'Donnell. I think he's way over the line to anti-Trump resistance. However, I did not find that he apologized and bent over backward. I thought he was brief, arrogant, and said, and we don't know if the story is accurate or not, like we're still working on it.
Oh, I see.
It was really perfunctory. And where was his producer? Where was the director? Where's the lawyer for MSNBC? This was just completely shoddy, indefensible journalism.
Well, that's
and we deserve the criticism we're getting.
Yeah, I, as a print guy, although I've done a lot of broadcasts, I don't understand how the broadcast system works. If this was a print story, it would be seen by a half a dozen people before it reached print. Yet he's able to get something on the air without talking to a producer or somebody.
Well, that is unscripted. That's why it's in the handoff. And that part is unscripted between Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell. And what he said in the top of his show afterwards, he said, I did not go through the rigorous verification and standards process here at MSNBC before repeating what I heard from my source. Had it gone through that process, I would not have been permitted to report it. I should not have said it on air or posted on Twitter. I was wrong to do so. So there are standards, but
he just violated them, which comes back to Ira's comment. Will he be disciplined and or terminated?
Well, that statement that you just read is a smoking gun. He's out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason he read that statement, Ira, is because they made him read that.
Well, sure.
Trump's lawyers rightly were calling for a retraction or we'll sue you, and he would have won if they had. No court would have allowed this. And now the real killer, though, is what if it's true?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's wrong to report a story that's not fully reported. It's not a story that was wrong. We don't know that yet.
There are many instances of this. In my mind, most notably, a print story that the Cincinnati Inquirer went through about 20
Chiquita
years
Banana.
Ago. Chiquita Banana, absolutely. Every investigative journalist knows about Chiquita Banana, which was a terrible chapter in the history of Gannett, America's largest newspaper chain, about to get bigger.
in which— Could you remind us what it was?
Yeah. The reporter had used illegally gained emails. That is, he went into the email system—
It was
system
a password into, a, yes. into the phone system. A source
voicemail,
gave him,
sorry.
Yes, gave him the password for the boss's, you know, call system. So he went in and listened to all the messages, which I could even see doing. But the stupid thing was they printed this, you know, in that graph, the umbrella graph it's called, where you say, in order to report this story, we talked to so many people, we looked at so many documents,
yeah.
and they added, we tapped into the phone system, listened to messages.
Stop.
Which is like saying to prosecutors, come and get us.
Yeah.
So they did. The story was retracted. They paid a lot of money. The reporters lost their job. And the whole point of the story was lost. And it was true. Chiquita Banana was like basically subjugating South American country where it was based.
Yeah. It was an American agricultural company that was manipulating the government in order
exactly.
to get favorable terms
exactly.
for their products and so on. And the editor lost his job also, by
yes.
the way,
yeah.
a highly respected editor of the Cincinnati Inquirer at the time. So,
but,
and the reporter probably didn't work again. So, which, by the way, is the way things ought to happen in journalism when there's an egregious mm-hmm. violation of standards. But the problem is the truth of the story got lost in the hullabaloo about the behavior toward getting to that truth.
Do you remember the CIA story that was done in California by Gary Webb? That's now a movie. Again, the story was not fully reported. Gary Webb was an incredible, extraordinary journalist, but he was too strong for the editors assigned to him, and he just bullied them, saying, you don't have the guts to run this story because it's the CIA. He implicated them in the spread of crack cocaine in the United States,
right.
said the CIA did this in order to make money.
We're not sure, though, the story was true, are we? We're not sure that it...
We don't know, because he came out with this story that, as I say, was not fully reported. Just like Lawrence O'Donnell, it was really apparent that steps had been skipped. And so a number of other newspapers came out and re-reported the story and attacked him for bad sourcing.
Can we go back... Can we go back to Chiquita for a second? You know, that Chiquita story was not the only story that we heard from Chiquita that turned out not to be true. The other one was, never, ever put bananas in the refrigerator. And the truth of the matter is, you can put bananas in the refrigerator, and we do all the time, and it helps. And they had to sort of stop that little tune that they kept playing about never putting bananas. You want me to sing it? In the refrigerator.
I think you're going down a slippery slope here.
Got it.
Well, but the point is that as you started out this segment, Rex, Trump is just increasing his criticism of the press, throwing the press's credibility in doubt. A sizable number of people in this country believe that the press has no credibility. And then when you have a story such as the O'Donnell story and occasional other stories, it only fuels that fire. And
so why? So why, Ira?
Why
do so many people think that the press has no credibility?
There are any number of reasons have been expressed, one of which is Trump has got a cult-like power, and people are willing to believe anything that he says.
That's not it either. Anybody who has ever had any dealing with the press
absolutely
would
right.
say, no, right. they didn't get it exactly right.
right.
Because you cannot get it exactly right without being part of the story.
You are so right.
Furthermore, every institution in American society has lost credibility. What institution does have the support that it had 30 years ago?
The military.
Public radio.
Oh, yeah, of course. No doubt. And probably especially emeritus faculty members, right? So they have credibility still, but not any of the rest.
There's no reason to be snotty about it.
No, of course not. But I do think Rosemary is right that we harm ourselves by not being perfect, which we can't be. And our standards require that we make corrections, that we admit to our mistakes. And so when we do that, people point the fingers and say, see, they're out to get us. The Dan Rather story also on George W. Bush's military
exactly.
experience
yep.
is another example of a story that aired before it was fully vetted. We have good reason to believe that George W. Bush did avoid an overseas assignment through pulling political strings, just as we really know that Donald Trump used this notion that he, what did he have?
Bone spurs.
That's it. The bone spur president to avoid military service.
But it is very easy, too easy, to blame the press for your own problems. There is a doctor who's put out a very interesting editorial. I think some of you may have seen it, where he's blaming the media as being complicit in the opioid crisis. That's my favorite blame the media story of all time.
Oh, boy.
That in the 2000s, the media was writing about how opioids were this miracle drug that would free free humankind from pain, and doctors are all saying it was safe. And that's our fault because we weren't skeptical enough. Do you buy that?
No, I don't buy it. And I think we should just repeat what you said, which was the press reported what doctors had told them. So the question then becomes, is that enough? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would argue, yes, if you're going to write a story about opioids in their infancy and the doctors say it's safe, are we supposed to scrounge around and say, well, wait a minute, let's find somebody who says otherwise?
You mean there isn't another doctor? In other words, you say, okay, the doctors told us this and we're going to print it in the paper. But it seems to me that the proper role of the press would be to, you know, search out the various MDs and physicians who...
Well, what do you do? You take a phone book and just go down and find...
Come on, Ellen. You go on the air every week with doctors and they tell you what they're doing. And do you say to them, oh, but wait a minute, before I put you on the air, let me get another doctor here on this program and talk about this instead of just accepting what this doctor says as being true.
I love this because as soon as, you know, I make the right point, you guys, the gang up group, sometimes I can count on Rosemary, but you and Ira are, it's disgraceful. I mean, you know, you just are going to support any malfeasance on the part of the press.
You know, I actually read this essay that I'm criticizing very closely because I do think the media is subject to criticism. But in this case, I'm not sure that in 2000 there was a different side of the opinion. The major doctors and hospitals were all saying the same thing. The press has stayed with the story and now is reporting, as the evidence came out, that no, actually addiction rates were much higher than anybody had predicted. And they've been now covering the opioid crisis. Now, what do we do now? How do you pay for recovery? What are the legal things? I think the press has done its job on this story.
How many times in the field of medicine have we seen stories written one way that the medical industry itself has turned around on? For example, red meat is good for you. No, red meat's not. Eggs are good for you. No, eggs are not good for you. So you report the first, and then if the second proves to be true, is it your fault that you ran the first story?
Yeah, blame the media. Absolutely.
Well, maybe it's the media's fault that we've turned doctors into expert geniuses who know everything and will save us. The media did the same, let me point out, with bad guys. With outlaws and the mafia, we made them romantic heroes, right? And that includes movie. And it was only in Italy, after the press began painting the mafia as really what they were, killers, extortionists, evil people, that public opinion began supporting prosecution of these. But maybe we're doing the same with doctors. They really don't know.
It is difficult to figure out how to handle health issues or mental health issues. You know, right. There's a great controversy over about a year into the Trump presidency, a number of psychiatrists published an essay in the New York Times describing the president as suffering from narcissistic disorder.
And there's a book that does that, too. You know, there's a whole bunch of physicians who got together to do that. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the question is, what is our role in this? Should we be accepting the notion of mental health professionals that the president is psychologically unfit? Mentally unstable. Is it all right to publish that, or is that an unfair, as his greatest supporters would say, is that an attack on the president that you can't make a diagnosis without actually examining the patient directly, right?
Well, but what if it had been done for Hitler? You know, in other words, there are many people who think that this president is such a risk to the American democracy and that we are in such peril that this kind of thing should be allowed and reported. And yes, you're right, mental health is an inexact profession, no question.
Well, Brian Seltzer of Reliable Sources on CNN did a really interesting look at this, how the press can really cover and should be covering Trump's fitness for office. And I'm impressed that doctors are willing to go on air and risk their own reputation and being attacked by Trump to say this man needs to be looked at. But what about us reporters who are not doctors at all? Are we able to say he's ranting or he's slurring words or name any of the other bizarre behaviors we've seen? Lying when it was obvious he was lying. Melania loves Kim Jong-un just like I do, and she's never met him. Are we right to point that out, or are Trump supporters correct and we're simply attacking him?
But can't you go get somebody else to say it? In other words, a good reporter, it seems to me, will go out and, you know, Rex will send his people out and they'll get this doctor.
That make a difference, Ellen? Isn't it lining up the experts to say what we want them to say?
No, not necessarily, because if you're doing it right, you get other people who say this isn't right.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though. It's difficult because then you are just sort of constantly filling your newscast because he does so much of this. You know, it's as Brian Stelter of CNN pointed out, there's a format for reporting odd things. You know, Trump wants to buy Greenland. We know how to report that when he makes an assertion, and then we cover the follow-up for it. but it's a lot harder to cover concerns about his mental health because it is a less concrete thing to grab a hold of.
Yes, that's true.
There may be method to his madness. He says that this mercurial stuff that he does, this one day and back the other way the next day and back and forth, as in, for example, the threat to impose higher tariffs on China. He says, well, that's just the way I negotiate. It's worked very well.
It's probably true.
Hasn't worked very well. His
well,
business.
Well, no.
His business.
Wait a second, Ira. He is president of the United States. I don't admire him, as you well know. I don't like him. I think he is a liar. But somehow it worked for him.
Yeah, but what he was defending was, this is the way I negotiate in business, and his business record is not admirable. So I don't know that it works.
Well, it works. It works in that he's made a fortune.
We don't know that either.
It helps when you start with $200 million from daddy. So
again, a hurricane is approaching Puerto Rico. And instead of saying what most presidents would say, which is, we're there for you, Puerto Rico. Good luck. We'll send whatever help you need. He goes off on a rant about the alleged corruption in the Puerto Rican government, says nasty things about the mayor of San Juan. I mean, what kind of person, much less president of the United States, acts in that manner? Now, does that mean he's mentally ill, or does it just mean he's an SOB?
Well, let's split it down the middle and say it's both. But the fact is, all I'm trying to say is, and I hate it, is that the guy is the president of the United States, and he got there using the techniques he used in real estate, which, as you point out quite correctly, Ira, have some real holes in them. Nevertheless, he is the president, and when he says it worked for him, you better believe it worked for him.
Speaking of how it worked for him, a man trying to be president, Bernie Sanders, has come out with a plan for journalism, published in Columbia Journalism Review. A key element of it is he's taking aim at mergers among the nation's biggest media companies. He says that he would like the president to impose an immediate moratorium on deals like the CBS-Viacom merger. He also says that major media companies should be required to disclose whether their planned mergers could bring newsroom job cuts, and employees should be able to purchase media outlets through stock ownership plans.
I'm the biggest Bernie basher in this group, so let me speak first. I have not been impressed ever by Bernie Sanders, but I am impressed by this plan. First, he did one on climate. That was very interesting. And now he did one on improving journalism. First, the fact that we have a presidential candidate looking at the importance of the media and the First Amendment, very impressive. And second, his plan is right. He does talk about stopping or limiting or better controlling these mergers. He also talks about stopping synergy, which is the fake term for job layoffs. which are a result of these mergers. It's a really smart plan.
Well, you know, you're right. It is a good plan. I always love to think about motivation. Who is his number one threat in winning the nomination? It's Elizabeth Warren, right?
We know that.
And Elizabeth Warren is terrific in that she comes up with incredibly and detailed plans. So, Rosemary, when you quite correctly show these areas where he is getting really quite substantive and in the weeds, I'm thinking this is motivated by Warren. I don't care what it's motivated by.
Right.
I agree with you. It's a good plan.
I think it's part of a plan to attack consolidation doesn't really take care of everything, because consolidation is not to blame for all of these job losses
That's not the whole plan, Rex. He's got a whole section in there about Silicon Valley and Google and Facebook taking material unpaid for from media and making money off of that. He does have a number
A number of bills in Congress. There's a bill to make it easier to take for-profit media companies and turn them into not-for-profits, which I think is could be a major step forward, hopefully.
Well, I'm torn by this. We've all experienced a lot of what Bernie describes in his plan, but as the only publisher in the room, former publisher, who's had to enact some of these draconian policies, as much as I didn't like them and don't like them, it makes me very nervous to see government approaching with private enterprises. I understand all of the negatives that he raises, but my instinct is, or my gut reaction is, hands off. We're private businesses. If we are going to do things that are ultimately going to hurt our credibility and our ability to thrive, which in fact we have, that's our problem.
Let me quote, though, in that regard, though. Let me just quote Bernie Sanders' piece, because I often get people who push back at me and say, well, the reason that the media is in trouble is because nobody trusts you, because you're anti-Trump. You're so liberal that nobody trusts you. But listen to this. Two Silicon Valley corporations, Sanders points out, Facebook and Google, control 60% of the entire digital advertising market. They've used monopolistic control to siphon off advertising revenues from news organizations. A recent study by the News Media Alliance found that in 2018, as newspaper revenues declined, Google made $4.7 billion off reporting that Google did not pay for, to Rosemary's point. Mm-hmm. So if you go after these megaliths, Facebook and Google, I shouldn't say go after, but if you...
Concentrate on.
Yeah. If you address the unfair share of the marketplace in the same way that, you know, I remember back in the early 80s covering the opening of the trial in a Washington courtroom when the federal government took down the phone company. It was a multi-year trial before a federal judge. But in those days, we had the phone company, and it was only because the phone company was split up that we began to have some of the diversification that led to some of the innovations like our cell phone network nowadays.
Well, you can see that Bernie has incorporated into his overall view about corporate takeover of America the media. And I think that's a really smart move.
Well, he also comes across as the left version of Trump in that he didn't use the phrase fake news, I don't believe, but there is a suggestion that it is leading. He wants more real news.
Well, you know, Ira, you know, your impassioned plea on the part of all of the business owners who own the newspapers was very interesting because, as you probably remember, when public radio got started and public television, there were some people who thought that this was socialism creeping into a place. And now, look at public radio. It has become the most credible of all. So I don't know that...
I hear you. Time is up, but I don't know that the right wing would agree with what you just said.
Yeah. Well, I don't care.
Oh, well, we'll let...
don't care.
Some of the left wing wouldn't agree.
That too. All right. So a commercial for public radio at the end. We're very grateful for the opportunity to be here on this wonderful public radio outlet. Thanks, Alan, for your hospitality here at WAMC. Ira Fussfeld from the Daily Freeman, Rosemary Armeo, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us on the Media Project.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.